signed with Edmonton. Tell me about the process and how it came about for you over, obviously, I would guess the last few weeks.
Yeah. Well, I've been involved with the bargaining committee for the CFLPA. So that had been my primary focus, not so much about playing. So once that, you know, got kind of completed or wrapped up, you know, it was time to turn my attention to the field. And I'd been talking with Brock Sunderland a little bit through the off season, and talks picked up, and here we are today.
You're a young man, but maybe not a young man for football. Did you hesitate a little bit with wanting to come back for another year?
You know, for the last couple of years, I think it's been a bit of a year by year process. And I strongly considered retiring, but at the end of the day, I don't really think that's in my DNA. For me to stop playing there, somebody's going to have to kick me out and tell me I can't do it anymore.
So this will be season number 16, correct, in the CFL?
Yeah, 16.
I believe so. Obviously, you got a love for the league and a passion for the game in the league to keep wanting to come back year after year after year. When a lot of guys, I believe I read you're the longest serving player in the league right now.
Yeah, I think I am now. When Ricky Ray retired, I took over the helm there. And, you know, I still have a passion and a desire to play. You know, obviously, I've been playing football for 16 now. So, you know, I just want to keep it going. And I'm all about winning championships.
Which you won in 2019 with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. That was your second one. What was it like with that club? Tell me about your memories from 2019.
I mean, memories that will last a lifetime. I had been part of that rebuild from kind of day one, and to kind of grow and turn into a contender and then see it through and become a championship team was a great experience I'll never forget. And, you know, the organization is amazing. You know, we got Coach O'Shea there as well, and a lot of good friends in the locker room. So great experience.
Does this kind of complete the circle for you a little bit? I mean, 2004, you're drafted by Edmonton. Was that on your mind kind of as you're looking for a deal this year and thought, hey, that's a nice fit?
Yeah, absolutely. There were only a few places I would have considered playing, and Edmonton definitely was at the top of the list. This does kind of bring my career full circle. I grew up in Sherwood Park, you know, working 50-50 at the games growing up, and it was my dream to play for Edmonton. So it's a dream come true at 40 years old.
Took a while, but you finally made it. That's kind of cool. What do you remember most about being a fan of Edmonton back in the day, going, like you say, going to those games and watching those games? Did you have a favorite player? Do you have any memories as a fan really stick out?
Well, I remember my first like kids camp at, it was at Bev Facey High School. There was Damon Allen, Gizmo Williams, and Willie Pless. And I was hooked, signed up for minor football. And from there, it kind of evolved. And as I turned into a receiver, I looked at Ed Hervey, you know, Terry Vaughn, Jason Tucker, you know, the roster was stacked at that position. And I was in awe when I was drafted in 04, you know, being in the hot tub after practice with those guys. Maybe too much in awe for that time in my career.
Tell me about that training camp. What do you remember from it and the end of it and how it didn't work out for you?
Yeah, that part was frustrating because I got injured a week before camp, but I was just trying to soak up, you know, I had all these Hall of Fame receivers and I was just trying to soak up as much as I could. And I went back to university the following year and kind of took a lot of those lessons and tried to apply them and take it into the CFL.
And I guess as you took your learning experience and moved on, and you were a receiver at that point, when, why, and how did you make the switch to long snapper?
Well, I was, I had been cut for probably, I think, the sixth time, and I was looking for a way to extend my career. And so, you know, there's an old saying, the more you can do, the longer you'll stay. So I started snapping just on my own, and, you know, started reaching out to some of the top snappers in the NFL, sending them my tape, working on it. And I planned on, you know, adding snapping so that I could play more receiver, but eventually it worked out the other way and I transitioned to long snapper. But I love the position. I love the detailed work, the craft. So I'm glad I made the switch, and it's provided me with a lot of opportunities. I don't think I would have two Grey Cup rings if I hadn't.
Did you get much response from those tapes you sent out to NFL players?
I actually did, surprisingly. It's long snapping, and I think kicking is the same. It's a tight-knit community. And as long as you're willing to show that you will put in the work, guys are usually very receptive with helping.
You come to Edmonton to work with a couple of veteran kickers too. I'm not sure who the holder is going to be yet as the other guy in your group, but you're coming to work with a couple of real veteran kickers in Sean White and Hugh O'Neill. That must be comforting for you.
Yeah, that was another really attractive piece with signing in Edmonton, is I get to work with two vets. And, you know, Justin Medlock played a big role in my career, and I'm looking forward to working with those guys as well. It's a lot of fun when you work with guys that care as much as we do.
The last year and a half or year and three quarters, how has it been for you? I know you mentioned you're on the Players Association Committee, I believe, so you've been involved in that a lot. I know you're a guy who's got some outside businesses as well. What's the last year and a half been like for you?
I'm not going to lie. I mean, it was tough, especially last summer when the season was canceled. You know, you're representing 900 members, and a lot of guys were really hoping to play, and that was tough talking through that. And a lot of guys' careers ended as well, and nobody really wants their career to end because of a pandemic. But, you know, we pushed through it, and I think everybody around the league is just very excited that we're back on the field.
Yeah, I talked to a few players since the announcement last Monday, and that's the general consensus is just elation, just excitement, just to get back to doing what everybody loves. And it's going to be pretty cool, I imagine, for everybody involved come July 10th.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of like when you first started playing the game, you were playing just for the love of game. That was the purest form of football. And it's kind of like that again. Not that it hasn't been, but you remember why you're playing the game, and you remove all of the outside distractions. And I'm excited.
So, what's the process now? You're on the inside of the negotiations, so you probably know a little bit better than some of the other guys I talked to. Isolation begins July 2nd, correct? And then on the field on the 10th. Isolation—that's just a pure lockdown for players in their hotel rooms.
Yeah, we have a 7-day isolation at home here first. And then when we arrive into town, we're on pure lockdown for 7 additional days. And we have to pass 2 tests before we can work out with the team or at the team facilities.
And what's it going to be like protocol wise? I imagine I already know there's going to be a lot that are in place just to keep everybody safe moving forward and make sure the games go as scheduled.
Yeah, I mean, there's a ton of protocol. We worked with each of the provincial governments to arrive at that, and they all approved it. So one thing we weren't going to do is step onto the field if it wasn't safe. And unanimously, we ratified it. So everybody is feeling very comfortable and safe about the protocol.
And I imagine after a week at home and then a week in your city of being in isolation, July 10th is going to be even more exciting after all that, not only just to be back, but just to be free a little bit, eh?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that 7-day isolation in a hotel room isn't something to look forward to, but it's kind of the cost of doing business.
Will you be putting some dents in the walls of your hotel room, long snapping?
I think I might flip a mattress over against the wall and start snapping into the mattress. Who knows? I'm not sure yet.
That's going to be a challenge, right? Because you can't do a lot in a hotel room. They're not usually big rooms. You know, you can ride a bike if you can get one in there. You can, I guess, take some bands or some weights or something. But staying in shape is going to be difficult.
Yeah, it will be. And I think staying in shape mentally is the biggest thing. Talking to family, friends, getting on FaceTime, just feeling some connection to people is going to be key, because, you know, we've kind of adjusted a little bit closer to normal life again. And it's kind of hard to go back into that isolation. So it will be a challenge for sure.
You thought a little bit about August 7th. I mean, you've played a lot of games at Commonwealth. You've come out of the other tunnel. Now you're coming out of the home room and through the big tunnel with all the noise. You got lots of family here, first off, still. And are you kind of looking forward to that and making that first appearance as a member of the Edmonton Elks?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I grew up dreaming to run out of that tunnel. I'm very excited about that. Whenever I've played there, I've always looked around the stadium and just appreciated it and the history, the tradition. And I couldn't be more excited to be part of it.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink. All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.